WOWDLP, Tacoma Park.
Good morning, everyone. We hope you're having a great start to the day. We hope you can get your juice to talking about art as we do every other Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. This is Tom Xenakis, and I'm with Sheila Blake, and we are the hosts of the Artist Experience radio show.
Good morning. Artist Experience is an hour-long radio show dedicated to looking at art. We hope that Tom and I can introduce our listeners to what we've been looking at and help you when you visit the exhibit, create in your soul, in your experience, your own work of art. The Artist Experience radio program has a unique mission. We look into the inward experiences of engagement with art, and we desire to make them explicit, both in the creator and in you, our listeners.
Good morning, everyone. Today we're going to start the second of a series on success and the visual artist. It's the second part, and today we're going to talk about success and mid-career artists. Artists that are young and vibrant and have been out of school a while, and we'll be talking to three artists from the DC area. Sheila, why don't you introduce our special guests And we thanked them for agreeing to do the show on live radio.
Yep, here we are all crowded in. It's great. Good morning, everybody. And I'm going to introduce our three artists. Leslie Blackman.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
And Melvin Nesbitt.
Good morning.
And Carol Blum.
Yes, good morning.
Sorry. So, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves? You can just start out in the order that I introduced you. How did you get started as an artist after university or high school or art school or wherever you went?
Well, I've been in Washington, D.C. since 1984. I'm afraid to admit it, but I was a lawyer. I quit to raise children. And after that, I just was drawn to do something creative. And originally that was fiber art, and then I moved into drawing and painting. And I studied at the Washington Studio School primarily for about 7 or 8 years now.
Oh, wonderful. Melvin, how about you?
Well, I've always drawn, and I've always kept a sketchbook since I was a kid. I never went to art school officially, but I've taken classes at different locations here in D.C. and my home back in South Carolina. And I started pursuing art seriously about 3 or 4 years ago. I wanted to learn how to more effectively use color in my art. And started taking classes at the Washington Studio School. And the encouragement and support that I got there really led me on the path that I am now to want to become a full-time professional artist.
Oh, wonderful. Carol?
Well, like Leslie, I had a life as a Washington policy wonk before I started doing art. And like Melvin, just kind of sought it out to picking up a couple of classes and workshops and finding a supportive environment with my colleagues at the studio school, and then kind of just chasing it when I retired from that other job I like to forget about now.
Oh my goodness, so your connections are really at, you met at the Washington Studio School.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's a one. Tell our listeners a little about that, because I think it's, I know so many people that have taught there, and I actually, you know, thought about it myself. How did that work? I mean, because you had your other careers, was it like a perfect, like, fit for the Washington Studio School in that sense? Because you could take, you know, any time like this.
Yeah. Well, I had been taking many classes at the Art League in Alexandria and a private study with Joyce McCartan, who's a local artist, terrific. What got me to the studio school is visiting the studio gallery in DuPont Circle, and I saw the work of Carol Rubin, who's also a graduate of the certificate program there. And I said, wow, I want to paint like that. So I just emailed her. I said, should I go? Where should I go? Where are you? She said, Washington Studio School. And it's just a wonderful, small, independent school, wonderful faculty, experienced studio artists who really stress foundation skills, and they really put you through your paces. But at the same time, as you master that, they're fine with you move into finding your voice, and they actively try to foster that, and you can go to any level of abstraction. And that was exactly what I needed, that combination of
things. Oh, that sounds very healthy, especially for, you know, you're kind of, you're beginning in your mid-career, and you, because, you know, it's kind of a place to, you know, foster and nurture, you know, your kind of skills. Did you guys have, like, Melvin, Carol, Leslie, did you have, like, any inspiration as young people, like artists that you looked up to and you know, it kind of helped the fire, you know, in making your art? Were there any artists that you really kind of saw and just wanted to kind of, wow, this is, you know, like a soulmate? I call it like an artistic soulmate.
I don't know. Yeah, I didn't have a soulmate, but I can have a vivid memory of my mother's soulmate for a Southern-raised woman who was an Army nurse during the Second World War. She had this attraction to Remington. And so I grew up in Ohio, and there were a number in the museum there, and she would take this passel of five little girls to the art museum to see these paintings and things that gave her such joy. And I think, like a lot of people, if there's someone in your life who you watch be engaged in something that is so foreign to my mother raising five little kids on a little farm, it sparks your interest. So maybe not one artist for me, but my mother's passion for that kind of thing.
Wow, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Melvin, how about you?
Do you remember the television show Good Times?
I didn't watch much TV.
Yeah, well, there was this character on that show named JJ. He was a painter, mm-hmm. and he made beautiful, beautiful paintings that I loved that depicted the Black experience in America. And the artist who made the paintings for that show was a man named Ernie Barnes. And I remember being a kid and watching that show and thinking I wanted to be like this guy.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Be like JJ. That was my first really big art influence.
Not as a young person, but as a fledgling artist making this career switch, two people stand out, and that's William Christenberry and Romare Bearden. I am from the Deep South, from Alabama, and their work just blew me away because they both are very much about that place. And when I saw what you can do with your past, and I really identified with them being a Southerner because I could feel how authentic that work was.
Yeah, that's really so. You know, you expect back to your kind of roots and your experience, and well, because well, William Christenberry taught with us at the Corcoran,
right.
And the late William Christenberry, and of course Romare Bearden. You know, He's like one of the greatest, artists of the 20th century. So those are really great models.
Yeah. So where do you guys go for your now inspirations? Like, do you go to galleries, museums, each other, friends? I'm really interested in this because of myself. So,
well, many places, though, time is short, so I do cherry pick. But I think being in D.C. with the art museums we have is fantastic. The most exciting thing I've seen recently was Sally Mann's photography mm-hmm. exhibit at the National Gallery. But again, that resonated with me as a Southern white right. woman, and she was grappling with her past in that region. And but I also love to go to just the local galleries and more current working artists in the smaller galleries. That can be more exciting than the big museums sometimes. So I do it all.
You guys?
I go to galleries, and I have favorite artists or artists whose work I seek out and always stumble, like when you used to go to the library and you were looking for one book and you looked at all the books on the shelf next to it and found something else rich and flavorful to try. I do that. I like contemporary and modern and American and some school of Paris, French. So I force myself into galleries that I would normally walk by quickly at the National Gallery because that often gives me something else. But I do that. I look at other artists' work. I go to other galleries. I use online a lot. I'll see somebody's name and a piece or something and then just seek them out online and scroll through their work.
Oh, good. We're going to talk about address technology
yeah.
in the audience. Melvin?
Yeah, I do the same as the ladies. I visit the local museums. You suggested to me a couple months ago that I go see the Bill Traylor show. And
oh, yeah.
I've been five times since. It's so much. And it's been a lot of fun and really inspiring to see that. But I think lately most of my inspiration has come from the conversations that I've had with other artists And the handful of people that I've talked to about the project that I'm working on and getting their memories and adding context to my memories to help the work. So, yeah, I've mostly been inspired by other people and the conversations.
You know, the trailer exhibit brings up that question that you asked early on about formal training or that kind of formal structure. Mm-hmm. And I think the exhibit of outliers, outsiders, whatever one wants to, whatever label one wants to use, raises some real questions about this notion of a traditional arts education and this ability to make art and do art and engage in art without having this label or this this certification as a person who just got certified like a piece of meat. You know, I'm intrigued by how those works I think resonate certainly with Melvin's work right now talking mm-hmm. about and Leslie's, these kinds of wonderful elements of story and image and memory, where mine, I'm a more figurative, but I know in those figures there's stories and elements of
stuff.
On this subject of outsider artists, I want to put in a plug for the American Visionary Art Museum, another place, favorite of mine, to visit
sure.
regularly in this area.
Well, we all jumped at the Bill Traylor show. I mean, we call that show, when we did a whole show on it, Honest Risk. And, you know, there's nothing more honest and risky about what he did. And we were in heaven, and, you know, and it was a huge show. And it, I don't know if it's, is it still up? I have no idea. If it's
Yes.
Oh, it's still up.
Oh,
wow.
Good.
But can I ask you, Tom, you teach at a university.
Yeah.
So how do you bring that spirit of Bill into your classroom or to your students?
Well, one of the first things I tell them is, like, you know, so many great artists never went to school. You know, that's the first thing I say. I got it. You have to put that in there because we have this idea that you have to go on some academic track. And I think that's a dangerous thing a lot of times in the society. You know, it's about expression. It's about being able to express oneself, and, you know, as a visual artist with paint, whatever, brushes, you know, drawing materials. So, you know, there should be no correlation between an academic degree and how beautifully one expressed themselves. I mean,
right.
That's something that the society has created. Remember, there was a few years ago where you had to get a PhD, you know, to, I mean, what kind of nonsense is that? You know, you just got to have to kind of really kind of just go for it. And I think that's the joy of the, you know, there's a million joys coming out of the Bill Traylor show. But it's so... it's this burning desire to say something about your world. I think that's really, really important.
Well, excuse me. One of my favorite things about that Bill Traylor show is discovering that he and Matisse at the same time came to the same place in their work. And Matisse through his Cut Papers jazz series, and Bill Traylor because he was in Montgomery and he was being so influenced by jazz and dance. And if you look at their work at the same time, and they are completely different, but they sort of coincided.
It's the human condition.
Yeah, the human experience. That's the other thing. You know, sometimes we put artists in a non-human category. But anyway, do you guys have other kinds of jobs that sustain you? Do you work at all in other arenas to kind of fuel your art careers?
Unfortunately, I don't. My husband is the breadwinner, and I know how lucky I am. So I don't. I mean, I work very hard at home raising three kids.
Right. Well, it's a full-time job too.
No, this is it. This is all I do, day in and day out. I have a very supportive partner, who has done really well in his career, so that's made it quite easy for me to just focus on my work.
That's today's art patron. that's what I call it. Yeah, oh,
very, very, very good.
Social Security, Medicare, you know, I'm going to make it that way. Although I haven't had the time because I've been really focused in the studio recently, but volunteer work sometimes at other organizations kind of helps me not feel like it's all just about me some days, and just trying to do some other things in the community to build community.
Well, that you know, that's really wonderful because again, it's the opportunity to make art, and you know, I a lot of times I call like your studios, it's a kind of sanctuary, you know, where you go in and you be yourself and you express yourselves. And a lot of times, like even in academia, it can, things get in the way. Although I learn from my students, I can't say I don't, and I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't, but you know, sometimes things get in the way, and it's that sacred space that sometimes we talk about on the radio here, that where you can go and just, you know, let loose, and I think that's you know, it's a real gift. It's a real gift for you guys in your mid career. Now we're going to get to the heavy questions, and the question, the title of the show is, you know, what does success mean to a mid career artist? So I want you guys to kind of try to see how would you define that in your life right now as success? Because that's a sticky word. You know, how do we define that? Do you guys want to chime in on this one?
I think for me, success with this particular project would mean that the imagery gets circulated, that it's out there, and that it reaches the audience that I made this for.
Tell us a little about this project.
I'm doing a series of collages based on memories of this housing project I grew up in South Carolina. I decided I wanted to do it because I remember being a kid there and taking field trips, you know, to museums and different art shows and things, and being told, you know, these are some of the great artworks, and if you want to be an artist, this is how you should aspire to paint and everything. And none of the artists that they were presenting to us looked like me or anybody that I, you know, was close to. And I really didn't relate a lot to much of the imagery. So as an adult, I was thinking about that experience as a kid. And, you know, at my age, I now know I'm not so unique. So other people must have felt that way, too. So I wanted to start creating imagery for that little kid from the projects on a school field trip. He can look up and he can see something familiar, possibly see himself or his friends in the imagery, and feel that his story and his life is as important as the other people's stories that are hanging on the walls.
I see the universality of art. I mean, I think that's such a powerful thing. You know, we think we're kind of on the single track, mm-hmm. but the truth of the matter is, we're reaching out, and we find so many people have this, they have overlap experiences, possibly the same experiences, and that's what kind of, that, to me, that's what kind of melds us together in a humanity. I think that's really, really important. You know, we think we're so unique, but the truth of the matter is, there are people out there that might have similar visions, and I think that's really great to express that. And I know that, you know, Melvin, you've been getting some press, and it's exciting to kind of. You know,
it is.
To get it out there in that sense.
Well, it's exciting. I'm just really concerned and hoping that it reaches the audience that I want it to. And I love the attention, of course. And it's been, I've had quite a few sales over the last few months. But I'm just concerned that, I don't know. I want to get some pieces in a school.
How do you get it
in
there?
A school, in a library, you know,
community libraries in grade schools. That'd be great.
In a public place where people from these communities can see it. You know, not just in art galleries or a museum, or in some collector's home.
I think that's a real challenge because you know, measuring success can be sales, it can be mm-hmm. reviews, it can be recognition, adulation, whatever. But there is this moment, and certainly it's true with Melvin's, but it's my figures are often women almost exclusively, and it is a kind of exercise in working through body image, women's images. I do some that are really just playing off works by Picasso, Matisse, Manet, I mean, and that male gaze mm-hmm. issue and question of men looking at women and painting them and me taking the kind of same composition. But like Melvin was saying, it's this notion of, you know, all those things, the public thing is great because if you go to the grade school and want to put your work on the wall, if you have this kind of affirmation from some official community, they might be willing to put Melvin's pieces on the wall. But if there was a structure in which Melvin's pieces could go on the wall of grade schools or community centers, Leslie's pieces that kind of explore Faulkner and these literary sources could go in library walls, then that would be success. That would be
absolutely
a way to do it.
Success in this order. Really, number one is get in there and do it. I continue to go in the studio 5 to 7 days a week and do the work and keep it good, keep it honest, keep it my stuff. And produce, and making better and better work. Okay, that's number one. Number two is showing, because I love to show. Group shows, solo, that's, to me, it's just wonderful. Sharing with people.
It's a platform, sure.
Exactly. And number three is sales. That'd be nice, but it really is number three. And I guess number four is to find a community of artists. I really enjoy being active in a community of artists.
And where do you show your work?
Well, I have shown at the Art League Gallery in Alexandria and numerous, a lot of different places, Black Rock out in Germantown, mm-hmm. in group shows. This is my primary. I show a lot at the Studio School Gallery. And I'm currently, haven't got my certificate, I'm looking at galleries around town, and I'm applying to solo shows, and so I don't know where that will be.
All right, we're going to talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, because in Washington, at least for me, there are very few sort of, I mean, I entered jury shows for a long time, and then I just got so tired of being rejected. Not always, but often. And it's very hard. What do? You go kick the walls for a while, and then, but it's really, it's sort of like I decide, I don't want to put myself through that, so I've had to find other places to show. But I wonder about that, how you find.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a full-time job in some ways, right? I mean, it's banging the bushes, looking for that source, that venue, and that's one of the things about contemporary art making is it's not just going to the studio. I mean, we can't all have some. Firstly, a patron that's going to be, a patronage is interesting because, you know, I'm finding that my patrons are like 80 and 90 years old now. And, you know, yes. And they're not buying art. They're buying.
They're deaccessioning.
I know. That famous story of like going to a Goodwill, a Salvation Army, and finding one of your paintings that one of your patrons just snuck into. It's like, that's the sign of a,
ungrateful children who are just cleaning out the attic after they've died.
Yeah, no, it's like that success in the end of life artist. You know, it's like, but we're gonna have a show. We're gonna have a show on that. I don't know if it's gonna be humorous, but we're gonna have a show on that coming up after this.
Authors will tell you when they see their books seconded at Costco, it feels really undermined.
Well. I think it's time to take a break, and we'll be back in a little while.
And we're gonna talk about some really exciting things that they're doing in the studios. But please take a look at our website and TacomaRadio.org and see the fabulous program schedule and diverse kinds of programming we do here. And while you're there, make a donation. Support our community, just much like our artists here in the studio. They're all about community, and it's important. You know this growing phenomenon of WOWDLP Tacoma Park. It's an absolute global phenomenon, and your contributions and your donations are also tax deductible.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see, no, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid, just as long as you stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Stand by me. If the sky that we look upon should tumble and fall, or the mountain should crumble to the sea, I won't cry, I won't cry, no, I won't shed a tear, just as long as you stand by me. And darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand now. Stand by me. Stand by me.
So, welcome back. You're listening to WOWD Tacoma Park, 94.3 FM.
Well, we have wonderful guests here in the studio today, and Leslie Blackman and Melvin Nesbitt and Carol Blum, and we want to thank them for coming back. And we want to kind of start the second part of the show with, how about D.C.? You know, D.C. is a good place to be as a mid-career artist, right? But now, have you looked like elsewhere, like in some of the other fields of energy and art, like, you know, New York or Baltimore or Chicago? Is that something that you know, because it's so hard, one, you know, to even get shows even here, you know, in locally. Have you guys tried that bigger world out there? Anyone? Has anyone give it a shot?
I haven't actually applied, but I'm starting to look. And I mean, I have a pretty good sense of what my work is, where it would fit. I saw an interesting call for entry in New York City recently, I'm considering. And I also look at places in the South that I know, big towns, big cities, and small places that I know are vibrant art towns, because my work would fit there. So yeah, eventually I will. I'm just at the looking stage now.
Yeah. You have a Melvin?
I've as far as looking for places outside of D.C., I've only really researched South Carolina. When I'm ready to present this work as a solo show, I definitely want to take it to South Carolina.
I think yeah, it's really important from, you know, mm-hmm. the goals of that show. And but I mean, you know, the great news about this project of yours is also the fact that there are many communities mm-hmm. that echo that same kind of, you know, probably experience. And that, again, that's the power of your project. It's this universality that, you know, other people, and maybe it doesn't have to be necessarily the South. I mean, you could give it a shot in, you know, Michigan or, you know, Chicago.
Without question. I mean, it has a sense of community. And so you can take that to children playing mm-hmm. on a sidewalk or something. This happens in Newtown, Ohio, where I grew up, in the middle of, you know. So I think that that's what makes great art. But I think it's also an opportunity to challenge other folks to see communities and see and hear and experience a narrative that they may be unfamiliar with, who have lived and grown up in circumstances that are different, better, worse, you know, no judgment, just different. And I know, as I say, even with my work, which is kind of more abstracted and figurative, it's seeing differently, asking, you know, somebody to look at a piece and say, it seems strikingly familiar, but there's something inherently wrong here, or there's something inherently different here, is a kind of satisfaction.
Well, I also wanted to talk about, just on a practical level, getting your work photographed. I know it's just, it's really expensive unless you learn how to do it yourself. And there are formats for entering shows. And oftentimes your work may not photograph as well as the actual work itself. So to find how, you know, I'm so lucky across the street from me is the photographer for the Smithsonian. So I say, when can you do it?
Rake some leaves to help and get an exchange going.
That's how it works.
Trading,
that's
bartering, how it works. Bartering.
It's so amazing. Mark Galician, he's the greatest. But it is such a, and then entry fees are expensive. And so you have to sort of really do a lot of research, and then after a while, what are you getting out of it? Even when you send your work off, say, I mean, at least this is my experience. So you get in a show and you send the piece off, and it's expensive to mail it, and especially if your work is a certain size, and then you get it back after a couple of months, and you go, well, what was that? So, do any of you have this experience or a different one?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. But that's why it's hard to just keep going in and doing it. I just feel compelled to do it, even though you get a lot of rejections. And then even when you get in a show, like you said, you usually bring it back home. But, you know,
it's part of the game.
What I do. So yes. What choice do I have?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things you just had to you just have to bite the bullet and go with it. The photographing and sizing, digital files and everything, I find that type of work really kind of tedious and frustrating, and wish I had someone to do it for me. But it has to be done. As far as submitting to shows and shipping work and everything, I found that there have been so many opportunities for group shows and other opportunities locally that I really haven't had to try to do that recently. So, just to kind of save myself a little trouble, I've just been kind of focusing, staying local.
You know, and Melvin was saying that there are a lot of local opportunities, and some of them aren't as expensive as some of the submissions. I think one of the interesting things about DC as an art community are those event kind of things, like that are not necessarily expensive. Art-O-Matic, the Art All Night,
yes.
Something that I found out, stumbled into late and didn't get much exposure to, was the Frida Kahlo piece that was going on around DC, where people were replicating. I can't talk about it because I didn't get a chance to see very much of it. But, I mean, there are these public things, or more public things, that at least get your work out there and folks can see it. And sometimes I often think of these submission to jury shows as exposing my work to whoever the juror is. And the juror might be very well placed. And so the juror now is kind of familiar with your work, and it may come back to mind. So even in that failure, someone new has seen what I do.
You know, yeah, it's something that I've always felt. It's just part of the job. I mean, it's, you have to kind of, plug away. Yes, it's a little expensive, and You know, the other day, I was shrugging my 12 wooden panels that I work on, wooden panels to the show, and I said, am I getting too old for going up and down the elevator into the and to the loading dock to put these in my little car? I mean, it's just getting, but you know, you got to do it.
You used the word job just now. It's like part of the job. And I think that that's that mental flip that you have to make. You know, I often used to say when I started taking some workshops and classes that as I entered a building, I'd leave my left brain side of my head before I retired out in the street so I could come in and kind of have some fun. But it's then, if you're going to do this, it's a job. And if you don't do those pieces, I love to think my work is so wonderful. People will flock, just simply flock to my studio. Ain't happening yet.
Well, you know.
So I gotta kind of push it a little bit. And one of the things I know that you wanted to think about is technology. And I'm still not good at kind of Instagramming, as my colleagues Melvin and Leslie are great at that. But so it's, you know, it's a job. You have to keep your website up. You have to keep an emailing list.
We definitely have to address that, because my nephew called me the other week and says, you know, Uncle Tom, you know, you got to get on Instagram and throw all those paintings out there.
To
a million people. And I was like, a million people? I mean, I'll go for a couple of dozen.
Yeah, but maybe another thing of embarrassment if there's not a lot of friends.
Yeah, well, I want to hear from, you know, Melvin and Leslie about this important, you know, networking and social media platforms. How have you guys been using that?
I recently quit Facebook. I just didn't find it very useful, and it was actually, you know, causing me a little bit of stress and, you know, seeing a lot of the posts and stuff on there. So I got away from that, and I love Instagram, because it's all, you know, imagery, all pictures and everything. But I have sort of a cautionary tale. I had a reporter find some of my imagery on Instagram a couple years ago, and contacted me wanting to do a piece about some sketches right after we moved to the new studio. I'm taking the metro back and forth to Silver Spring, and I start sketching other riders on the metro in my sketchbook. It's just in a warm-up practice, you know, before going into the studio to work. And I started sharing them on Instagram. I was feeling this pressure, you know, to keep posting, to keep my followers engaged and everything. So I started sharing those sketches, and they got a lot more attention than I was expecting or prepared for. And then after the Washington Post piece about it, I got a lot of people contacting me wanting to buy the sketches, and I wasn't at all prepared to sell them.
Mm-hmm.
They were crayon drawings in my sketchbook, you know, so I had no idea how to make that opportunity work for me, and I felt really silly and frustrated, because of course I couldn't turn down the opportunity to be in the paper, but at the same time I was just not, you know, professional or prepared to take advantage of the opportunity like I could have.
Well, I think it's a good learning experience in some ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, here it's kind of, you get the press, which I think all press is good press. I don't care if they slam the show. I think it's all press is good press. And especially, you know, it's so rare to get that around here, especially. But Leslie, I mean, how about you with the technology? Are you kind of in the same...
I quit Facebook too, but I love Instagram.
Well, I'm not going on Facebook.
I love Instagram.
I'm getting off Facebook after the show.
I don't use it for sales, but what it is for me is a chance to just meet, you know, in cyberspace, so many artists from all over the world. It's just amazing. And you tend to, you put your work up with the appropriate hashtags, and people who like that kind of work will start following you. Mm-hmm. And they're from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always go and look at their stuff. And if I really like it, I follow them back. If I don't, I don't. Because I'm keeping it high, you know, I'm keeping it tuned to help me. And I look at I get ideas for artwork or a new technique to try, and some of these artists blow me away. Mm. And it's just supportive. It's kind of a cyber version of the local critique group, and it's just wonderful. And the other thing about Instagram is you can put works in progress. It doesn't have to be the serious finished piece. In fact, what most people do are, this is what I drew today. This is what I tried today. Look at this. Isn't this crazy? You know, or just mid-process things. Yeah. And I love to see that, and I love to post that.
That's important, too.
Also, I think the feedback that you get on Instagram is much more useful than any other social media platform I've used.
That's fantastic. Sheila, do you want to kick in here?
Yeah, because I'm part of a ladies artist group, and they were all talking about Instagram too, and I'm thinking, I'm going to have to do it. But what is the feedback like that you get?
Well, people will comment on the fundamentals of design and art elements that they can identify in your work.
Uh-huh.
The critiques would be much more specific than, as opposed to, say, somewhere on Facebook, it's like, oh, it's so pretty, or I love it, which is great. You know, you love positive feedback.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole point of using social media for me as an artist was to get some feel for how people were responding to my work. And I get more of that from the followers and the people on Instagram than I did on Facebook.
Mm, that's so interesting. It's like a critique that comes on your phone or something.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the thing about the critique. I had.
I was going to say, I have to say, I don't get those kind of substantive critiques. Which I don't know why, but I just don't. But to me, it's valuable just to see who's responding to what. And it's not that I get discouraged if I don't get a lot of likes, but it can be interesting to see, people are really responding to that one and not that one. And I wonder what it causes me to reflect on my work. It sort of causes me to step back, like seeing your work in a mirror, and like you can be more detached and say, maybe there's something I saw or didn't see.
That's really important, actually. You know, sometimes we get emotionally attached to something in our work when another part of our work is kind of, you know, fueling kind of responses. You know, you guys have mentioned community a few times, which we're so happy here at Tacoma Park. This whole radio station's about community at WOWD LP Tacoma Park. But you get together for these critiques, and we've got a kind of time's running out. And that's kind of an old-fashioned idea, because this idea of artists getting together, like whether it's the abstract expressionists at the Cedar Bar in New York City or the impressionists over, at the cabaret, you know, going to see the cabaret. How do you guys do it? Because so many artists in some ways work in a bubble. I really want to hear about this. It's so appropriate for a radio station. How'd you guys kind of get together and, you know, you just, you know, you talk about art and your own art, and it's got to get intimate, and I'm sure it's very, very healthy. So chime in on this.
Well, it may be old-fashioned, but I just find it necessary and vital. I mean, we get all these rejections, right? Like, or you have enough discouragement to be with a group of like-minded people who have that same zeal. It just buoys you up. And also you get a lot of good constructive criticism on your work.
Leslie actually initiated the group. We were at a opening reception at the Washington Studio School, and we hadn't seen each other in a few months, and we were talking about getting together, but, you know, we were both so busy working on our art, and so Leslie was like, well, let's just get together and talk about our art. She's like, we could do, like, a little critique, and we both got really excited as we were talking about it, and we roped in Carol, and we've just been doing it, you know. In fact, I think if it had not been for our critique sessions and getting together and talking about our work, that was a really important thing that came out of it, is that you work by yourself so many hours, so many days and weeks, yet you don't really talk about what you're working on or what you're doing. And so the first couple of times we did this, it was difficult for us to talk about our work. And we were both all a little surprised at how uncomfortable we were articulating it, but it's become a lot easier.
Well, and that's
because of the group.
Yeah, that's one of the lessons. You need to be able to describe
right.
your work. That what they call when you sell things, a 30-second elevator talk or something like that. So this helps you refine that. The other thing that I find really interesting or valuable to me is that as we do this, we do have conversations about one another's arts. I certainly steal with much attribution to these two about how to find a color or see a structure in a piece that really works. But it's also building up two people, at least that I'm sure of, who have a history with my art, who can see when something feels different that I might not even see. I mean, we've only been doing it for a while. We promise ourselves once a month. Mm-hmm. But it is that, that's different. Today, we started off over at Melvin's studio to come over here, and I looked up and went, wow, that's a different palette. And so you see something different and just want to chase what that means or how that was. Mm-hmm. So that history, building up this group of people who have seen this stuff kind of come along, is really, it's like Instagram in person.
Right. Well, I think the human
it's
element
better than Instagram.
Yeah, I think the human element, I think, is really important in this. You know, in all the eye contact and all. You know, we only have a few more minutes, and why don't we kind of go through the group here and any exciting news, things on the horizon? I know that Melvin talked about this project he's working on. You guys want to share before we. Kind of sign off here. Anybody got anything they'd like to kick in about, you know, what they're working on the studios?
Well, I'm really excited about what I'm working on. I spent the last year on some very, a cycle of things based in literature, Sound of the Fury. But out of that, I was building visual vocabulary, and a key thing that came out of it is mules. The mules being an iconic symbol of the South and many things. And they're visually interesting. So I started this series. I've done about 30 paintings, and they're so much fun, and they're doing what I want them to do. So I'm excited about that.
Oh, that's really exciting.
I'm going to do, I'm trying to distort images, if that's at all possible, if you see my work, even more. I've gotten fascinated with grotesques, or what they call grotesques, the kind of devils and things that lie in ancient and masterworks and how I can manipulate them.
Wow, that's very good. There's a huge pool of that out there.
And there's so many contemporary opportunities.
Oh, yeah, right. You know, it's like I'm just, you know, I hope I have nightmares now. It's about Francis Bacon tonight. Melvin?
Yeah, well, obviously I'm really excited about my project, but I also want people listening to know that even though my imagery is set in a poor, struggling neighborhood, my work is about joy. And I think it's pretty apparent when you see it.
Absolutely.
But besides that, I'm really excited. I'm going to be moving to a new studio space soon.
We're going to miss you at the old one.
Thank you. I'm going to miss you guys, too.
But, this is very exciting. You know, this has been an important conversation. I actually wish we had 3 hours with you guys. I know we'd be taking you away from the studio.
Yeah.
But we want to thank Leslie Blackman, and you can see her work at leslieblackman.com. That's LeslieBlackman.com. I hope that's right. And then we have Carol Blum, and it's CarolBlum.com. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then we have Melvin Nesbitt, whose work is melvinsart.com, MelvinsArt.com. And thanks so much for coming and joining us at Tacoma Radio. You guys, you know, you do well in the studios, but you also do well on radio. And, you know, this is a very important part of the D.C. community. We often have to thank Bobby Hill. We couldn't do it without Bobby.
Thank you, Bobby.
Bobby's. And Sheila, why don't you tell our listeners about an upcoming show?
Yes. Well, our next show is going to be on the Four Freedoms. When we did our Thanksgiving show, we talked about Norman Rockwell's piece with the woman,
Thanksgiving.
The Thanksgiving piece with serving the turkey and the white faces all around the all around the table, and where that comes from, and that's actually part of a series, a history series called The Four Freedoms, and so we're going to talk about that. And
we're also going to see the next month for you, yes, traditionals, the Jacopo Tintoretto show coming to the National Gallery. I don't know if it's been delayed because of the government shutdown, but anyway, we want we'll have another show on success in a few weeks with aging artists. Will I include myself, Sheila? I don't know.
Definitely me, not you. You're still a kid.
Oh, stop it. So stay tuned to Bobby Hill and this music, because Bobby shares his incredible knowledge and music depth every Saturday from 10 to 1 p.m. And Avant-Garde Jazz is right here, so don't keep that dial fixed. And experience art in everything you do. And thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm gonna have myself a real good time. I feel alive. And the world, I'm turning inside out. I'm floating around in ecstasy. So don't stop. Having a good time, having a good time. I'm a shooting star, leaping through the sky like a tiger.